Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
I'm Tim Jenkins, and welcome to All Things QB, where I watch every single clip and break down the most important ones today.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
You've seen progressions that align with the quarterback's eye. I hope that's what we get more of, but I hope we continue to see some of these concepts and the way we build things are better for the quarterback versus just looks good on paper.
Tim Jenkins with Raheemi Harrison Grody on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
We like jumping into the film with Tim Jenkins. He joins us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. We're thrilled to be able to talk to him about a winning Bears playoff game. Tim also joins us via Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. He is the founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. Tim, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm fired up, like I'm sure everybody is over there.
Yeah, I think you put out that Bears video about 7 minutes after the game ended. What excited you about what you saw?
Yeah, I went for 1:30, too, which was a shocking amount of time to hear yourself talk, as my wife would say, highly enjoyable for myself. But I think what was most interesting, what my big takeaway was if the live TV shot would have been zoomed out, right? If we wouldn't have been the TV, you know how it's all zoomed in, nobody likes it. But if it was zoomed out and you could see all 22, I think when the Bears fell down big, we would have all felt a lot better because I actually think I keep calling it a fluke, and I hate that word. It's almost like the less probable outcomes happened consistently to the Bears to the negative on 3rd and 4th down early, which then I think led to obviously the huge deficit. Like, just think about on the same series, you get the Cole Kmet drop, which was it a drop? Was it a fumble that the Bears recovered for a first down? You'll never know, right? We ruled it a drop. Then we get the semi-bad snap that we have Luther Burden wide open on a shallow cross, and the ball gets batted down. That's 3rd and 4th down. Like two, you know, not really highly probable things happen in a row. And then that happened consistently for the first 3 quarters. And then all of a sudden the Bears come alive and it doesn't happen at all. And it happens in the opposite direction, the 4th and 8 that I'm sure we'll talk about where he's off the ground. Things like that consistently happen. Then all of a sudden you make a run. So it was interesting because I actually thought we were going to see a lot of stuff early in that game where this offense struggled. And I tell you that I'm not sure I really walked away from the film seeing that. I more or less saw a bunch of opportunities that we didn't quite take advantage of with things that aren't even really coachable fixes. It's just our guys making a play, and it's the guys that have made a play most of the year. So to me, it's like I feel even better going into this game, I think, than I really thought I would diving into the tape.
Cannonballing into this tape, because that's what we all wanted you to do, because I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk to Tim on Tuesday. Tim, I'm going straight to the meat of the issue. Talk to me about 4th and 8. Talk to me about that completion and how difficult that was, and what does that say about Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I mean that play was a perfect illustration of everything we've always wondered if Caleb Williams could be at this level versus college. What I'll also say is actually pretty funny is, one of the, I can't remember if it was the center or the right guard, but a couple of our guys up front had a tough night. And again, it's, you know, we got some different looks and we did good at times, but we had a tough night. And I can't remember who it was, if it was the center or the right guard, but one of them turned somebody free, which then gets Caleb out of the pocket and then enables him to make that jump throw that we'll all never forget. However, if we would have just stuck on our guy, our outlet, Kmet, on that, or I don't know if it's Kmet or Loveland, on that route, on that concept, though, is wide open to the field. Caleb just gets bumped off the spot to where he can't get back to him. But if he hits him, it's the same result. It's like a 60-yard completion. He just can't get through his progression because of the pressure. And then that, I think that play is going to live on as, I don't know about you guys. Here's the deal. I've started covering the Bears, and I try to be like as objective as I can. But the more I cover them, the more I like love them and fall in love with them, fall in love with the fans.
Bears. Yeah.
Like, it's just like it's a gritty group of people that I just love. Well, so now my kids are Bears fans. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm sitting there on Saturday night, and I feel like I try to stay pretty objective and pretty, like, you know, level. And it's like, I'm sitting there like, it's over. They suck. Like, it's, you know, I'm having all those same reactions. And then we make plays like that, and it's just, it's been awesome. Yeah, but that play right there is flat out incredible. That's why he's, you know, I see a bunch of people on Twitter being like, oh, you know, I don't think the scouting community got it right. It's like, dude, he was the first overall pick. So I don't know about that take. But, yeah, it was
best
it was
throw
awesome.
Of his career that you've seen?
Most impactful.
Okay.
Most impactful. Yeah. I think, you know, anytime both your feet are off the ground and you layer it in like that, it's up there. Is it the highest degree of difficulty, I think? I don't even know if it's the highest degree of difficulty that we've seen this season. That's what's crazy. But yeah, that's the biggest moment, I think. It's going to go down as one of the better throws in his entire career, no matter what happens from here, just because of what that moment means to win that game against the Packers at home after what they've been through. Like, that's, yeah, one of the most meaningful plays I think we'll see in a long time.
Sorry, Tim, if you saw me gesticulating wildly over here, but you are part of some breaking news right now. Breaking news is brought to you by the Take the North podcast with Mark Grody and Dan Wiederer. After a historic 19-season run, this per Adam Schefter, Mike Tomlin just informed his team he is stepping down as the Steelers head coach. Sources tell Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, and me.
Wow.
19 years, and Mike Tomlin is no longer the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Consider my brain scrambled. I don't know about you, Tim, and I'm sorry to bust up what was really good football talk, but feel free to react with us if you like.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because last night I tweeted out, I was sitting there and I was watching Aaron Rodgers, and I know that, like, his personality and other things have, like, kind of made him more maybe divisive then, but I was watching him, and it was kind of like a good memory of, I remember watching vintage Rodgers, right? It was bad memories for Bears fans, but I remember watching vintage Rodgers. He was, like, one of the last guys, I think, from my childhood that I really, you know, you looked up to, and you were like, man, I, you know, want to do it like him, and then seeing him kind of go out was a bummer. And then you see Tomlin, who, you know, shoot, it's he's been a staple for so long. And I do think I get it, right? I get it if you're the Steelers organization and trying to think, okay, hey, I want some new blood. I do think at times we've got to be cautious of, you know, the new blood. You know, it's not always good, right? I think we've seen that in Chicago in the past. But then you get Ben Johnson in there and you go, shoot, this is obviously a great play. So it's tough for me because I do have a lot of respect for these guys that have had a ton of success and continued success. I think obviously anytime you're consistently in the playoffs and then lose, whether fair or not fair, that consistency of being elite like starts to, the expectations rise along with it. You know, it's always funny to me, right? So you get these guys like Harbaugh and Tomlin, and they get into the playoffs and they lose. And then next year, though, their replacement will come in and could not make the playoffs and they ain't getting fired, right? Like, it's such an interesting dynamic of the more success you have, the bigger the expectations are. And if you don't meet them, the guy after you is going to have less. You know, it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be probably a vacuum, kind of like what we had at Alabama this year, I think, with DeBoer, to where the guy will get more chances, but simultaneously you're always getting kind of compared to the previous staff. So it'll be interesting to see who they get to come in there.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what Mike Tomlin's next move. I mean, everybody just assuming it's going to be television, but I would imagine there's going to be a ton of teams that'll be knocking on his door. As we talk to Tim Jenkins, the founder of Jenkins Elite here on Raheem Harris and Grody. And Tim, just getting back to the Bears game. So there was the 4th-and-8 throw to Roma Dunze. What about the 25-yarder to DJ Moore, the play that was set up, the bite on the screen, and just even DJ Moore, as he discussed with us around his locker, said it was hard to, like, with those bright lights out there, like a receiver looking up at those balls, like some of those are, you get your eyes stuck in that light. It's not easy.
Yeah, I love DJ. I mean, here's the thing I like about DJ is he had the drop right before it, right? He had the scramble drop.
Yeah.
And then I pointed it out on the film breakdown, and, you know, he'd never going to tell the media, but you know dang well, if I'm in that locker room, I'm giving a hard time because he was going to body catch that no matter where that ball came in, right? He was going old school. That thing was going to hit his shoulder pads, and he was going to hold on to that thing like it was little giants no matter what happened. So, here's the thing about DJ too. I have so much respect for how I feel like he competed last year and how I think he's competed throughout his career, even on teams that a lot of guys are packing it in and getting ready for vacation. Like, it feels like he's got a reverence for the game with his level of competition, no matter what, right? The appreciation for how much these tickets cost and people getting out there and what he owes it to the fans. For him to be the guy that has the drop, you know, your heart broke for him, but then for him to be the guy that then ends up catching it and essentially having two game winners against the Packers, I don't think there's a more deserving guy. So to me, that was awesome. The scheme, of course, you know, the tackle over aspect of it was great. To me, what I love, though, is just that it was set up from basically the first third and long, right? They throw the screen out there on the first third and long. It's a big conversion. I like Ben's instincts there to, okay, hey, you get a big play on fourth down, right? And the fourth down, it's funny because everybody's all juiced up about the scheme of the fake screen touchdown. What we're not juiced up enough about is, and I don't know if it was third or fourth down, but when we hit Swift in the flat,
yeah,
right after DJ's scramble drop, we then hit Swift in the flat. But what nobody notices is that was on the quick cadence. So it's like we lined up, we're in basically like a wing set with Swift as a wing guy. We're making this linebacker who's used to playing run, navigate through traffic. He's in the midst of communicating and we hit him with the turbo and it's like, boom, ball snapped. Everybody doesn't even look like they're supposed to be ready. That's how that thing's supposed to look. And then your ball's out in the flat. Like, that to me was an elite level scheme. Like, I appreciate the shot play when you're on the fringe red to score. But like, to me, I'm always so in love when you find a third or fourth down, an easy pickup. Like, those kind of downs and distances as a play caller and a quarterback are such a grind. Trying to sort through who's the pressure look, what coverage are they in? When you can then steal a couple throughout the game based on just, you know, more or less like a get 'em play, right? Where it's like, hey, we're just going to quick cadence you when you think we're in the midst of one of our shifts and motions. Like, that to me is awesome. That's what I think gets me most excited. Of course, I love the fake screen touchdown and him going for the throat after a big play. But I do think we don't talk about that play enough where it was, man, the quick cadence, we have the right personnel out there. That was pretty. The other one's awesome. But to me, that third, fourth down was, I think, the better call, the better scheme.
This is all great stuff. We're talking to Tim Jenkins, our quarterback guru, here on Raheemy Harrison Grody. And Tim, as a watcher of ball, a lover of offense, and somebody who's not only studying the Bears, but you also know a thing or two about offense and the rest of the NFL, you know, what do you think about the matchup between the Rams and the Bears just from a schematic standpoint and from a inspirational standpoint when it comes to how modern offenses are constructed? Like, I think this is it's fun if you really just like watching what the NFL has evolved into.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, team. I love you guys. I was hoping for a Philadelphia win, you know? Like, I like Brock Purdy. I like San Francisco. I was hoping for a Philadelphia win because I feel like Philadelphia coming to Chicago, a little bit, I don't want to say easier, but I think a little bit easier.
Yes.
No, you can say it.
Yeah, we all think it, so that's fine.
Yeah, this team is scary. I mean, so here's the thing is, I think, you know, you sit there and you talk about Loveland. How are they going to game plan Loveland, right? I think it's a dynamic question. How are the Bears going to game plan Puka? Because you go watch the first three completions from Carolina, LA. Puka lines up in three different spots. He lines up in a tight split to start, easy completion. Then he lines up in a wing split where they motion him to fullback. They throw it out to him, easy completion. Then they line him up at tailback and he runs Viper for a touchdown. Those are the first three plays. So to me, you sit there, because it's so easy to sit here and say, let's double Puka. It's like, good luck, dude. How are you going to double a guy that you have no idea where he's going to line up? Because it's like, what are you going to do? Just dedicate two defenders to him? Because to me, Colson Loveland presents the same argument, which is, you don't know where these guys are going to line up. So it's like, okay, hey, yeah, okay, let's just follow two guys around Puka or Colston. Then you forget that, guess what? Ben Johnson and Sean McVay don't spend all offseason in Cabo sitting by the pool drinking, drawing up only pass plays. These dudes are drawing up run plays too, right? So you need the extra guys in the box. It's just, it's a fascinating game. I do think, like, I've said this, and I hate saying it, but I do think it's the truth. We have to figure out how to keep this thing tight, and it can't be slow our tempo down to keep them off the field. Like, I think that's playing to lose. We need to keep up with them. If this is a tight ball game down the stretch, I lean Bears. If you tell me, hey, Tim, somebody wins this game between 1 and 6 points, I think it's the Bears. If you tell me, hey, Tim, somebody won this game by 17, I hate saying it, I think it's the Rams. Like, I see them as the more lethal threat in a runaway game. However, if this Bears team sticks around, I think there's a lot of stuff to how they've been winning, and I think they can pull it out. I'm not going to sit here and lie. The Rams offense scares me to death. And, you know, Jordan Love, I think they were executing well. I don't think this Rams team is the Packers. I think the Packers are good on offense. I think this Rams team is much closer to San Francisco, and we saw how that went, where it was, we just need to keep up with them. There was going to be no second half where they go 3 and out 9 times, right? So that's just what scares me about this team. I don't know about you guys, but you watched the end of that Carolina game, and I feel like, you know, I hate advocating for sports betting, but I'm big on the live money lines right now. I felt like the Rams coming back to win that when they went plus money was the easiest bet I've ever made in my whole life. It looked like they were going routes on air, and it was to win a playoff game. Like, if that doesn't scare you into not playing soft coverage, I don't know what will. I think your game plan this week, if you're a defensive coordinator, has got to be, hey, high variability in our pressure looks. We're going to heat them up. Stafford very well could gash man coverage and our heat zone, but I'd rather live in the world in which he's gashing us under duress and we can potentially make a negative play, rather than, hey, we're going to play quarters and just let him essentially walk down the field. My thing is, if the Rams beat us, I want Stafford to be questionable next week. And I don't mean that in like a negative, like, let's hurt him. I mean it in a, you're getting after him within the whistle consistently. Like, that's what you have to, I think, go into this week. That has to be the game plan. If you're going to let him hit his back foot and you're going to play bend but don't break, I don't see a world in which we come out on the right side of it.
Hey, real quick, Tim, because you just said what you said. I think one of the ways they can do that is by running the football. You mentioned the Eagles and why they were a good matchup, because they were so dominant in the run game. Is there anything you're seeing with what's happening up front that makes you think that they can get back to running the football like they were earlier in the season? Because they only had 93 yards rushing against a Packers team that's pretty beat up.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at that, the Packers had a bunch of run fronts. What I tell you is, I felt like when it was needed, you know, that you, to me, that Swift touchdown where you're on the 6-yard line and he's untouched, that's a sign of an elite run game, in my opinion. Now, listen, I get that the yardage production wasn't there. I do think that was, I think a lot of it was how the Rams were, or not the Rams, sorry, how the Packers were playing us. I do think we saw some critical drops in which would have elongated these drives. I think we would have seen a high scoring shootout had we made a couple more plays, like just our receivers catching the football. And we wouldn't have felt like the production was down, because I think eventually the Packers would have kicked it back into too high, and then we would have been able to run the ball more effectively. So I think that was more or less just like the game flow, I think, shifted that way, because we weren't executing in the shots and the quick game, which then made the Packers feel like, oh, we're going to stay in this, which is also why I believe we were able to then generate chunk plays when we're down multiple scores, was because, oh, hey, we haven't done it yet. So they stayed in the defense that had been successful, and then it ended up biting them in the tail late in that game.
That is Tim Jenkins. Tim, thanks for joining us and being a part of some big-time breaking news. That was great.
Thanks, Tim.
What a treat. I appreciate you guys. Y'all are the best. Hopefully one more great week, and then another week after that.
There you go.
Don't stop now, boys.
Playoff mentality for Tim Jenkins. If you want to watch his breakdown, all hour 30 of it, go to YouTube. It is always a great watch. All Things QB is where you can find more from Tim Jenkins. And because it's a playoff winning edition of the show, because we gave you bonus calls, and because we gave you bonus meatball machine, which is coming up at 1:45, it's time next for bonus Inside the Locker Room.
Yes, sir. Jalen Johnson, Colston Loveland, and Jaquan Brisker.
Jaquan and Jalen.
Don't put that in my head. I'm going to use those names in the locker room
you
tomorrow.
Put that in our head.
Oh, God, you're right.
Bears.